And staggering your way next on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it is the December 23rd, 2021 edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. 2 hours of various interviews, musical spots from David Rovix, cribbed from the internet, but hopefully enjoyable and informative nonetheless. And I'm going to be looking at and talking about and interviewing people on the issue of the Pajaro River. They didn't get an injunction protecting what's called the Bridge Street Camp, which is where a number of people from the Pajaro River moved to when they were forced off the Pajaro River by the dissolution of the injunction protecting them in, December 13th or thereabouts, or on December 13th. So we'll get into that, and probably some other things too, but let's do it before I wander off somewhere else, and still got the energy to do the show. So let's see what I can. I'll see what I can do.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So it was a busy week this last week. There was a homeless memorial, two of them actually, reading of the names of the homeless dead. First at 10 o'clock in the morning, Zoomed from the, I don't know if where exactly it was from, but sponsored by the Housing Smidgens or Housing Mutters, Housing Matters, what they call themselves, and a couple of other groups that read off the names of the homeless dead and had some commentary and some reflections and some, ain't it a shame kind of stuff. But I'm usually rather cynical and sarcastic about this kind of memorial because I often think it's what people really, these authorities who come together who are saying, oh, woe is us that all these homeless deaths have happened. And yet they continue to essentially do very little about the laws that criminalize homeless people and make the deaths far more likely, or the massive expenditures on other items and the misappropriation of funding for homeless people. It doesn't get to homeless people much at all. So anyway, there is that, and I believe, I think I posted that. If you go to the Huff website and you look for latest and lost shows, you'll see the what I was able to get, the audio portion, most of it, almost all of it, of the homeless memorial this year. And they read the names of the dead. And I'm actually hoping to post those names. I put them out as a flyer in the afternoon of that same day, Tuesday the 21st, where at the Food Not Bombs lot number 27 next to the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union at Laurel and Front, there was a sort of a small ceremony, not very well attended, but it was took place at the same time as the Food Not Bombs meal. Some folks did speak up about and remembered the people that they'd lost, myself included, very briefly. And I'll play some of that. We also read the names of all the folks who died. I don't think it's helpful to force you to listen to over 130 names, because there was a relatively large number of people, and it's a little obscure as to whether this was the county or the city. It did include people who died, who had been homeless, but then who died indoors in nursing homes or hospitals or shelters, I believe. And again, as I said, I'll try to be posting the Homeless Persons Health Project's assessment of all this. They're the ones who gather the names, and they also put out an analysis of the data. And it's growing every year. So that happened on Tuesday. On Monday, there was Sunday, and we'll hear about this from Wes White. There was an attack, a scare involving the potential sweep for the people who are at the Pajaro River, the site that they fled to or moved to, 25 folks, and actually I think more, and also community members kind of crowded in to be sort of a buffer between with the police, or at least a witnessing force, somewhat similar to what happened, I guess, at, I wasn't there, but this is what I speculate, similar to what happened in December of last year at the San Lorenzo Park, when the community was able to stop, along with an injunction that they got, I should say that the homeless union got, protecting that encampment for at least, actually, for another 6 months, although it got moved to the benchlands, and then eventually the injunction was dissolved, and it's gotten washed away partially by the rains, and there are, of course, more rains even as, you know, throughout the day. I'm making this on the day before the netcast on Wednesday, the 22nd. Netcast is the 23rd, when you'll be hearing this, perhaps. Anyway, we're going to be listening to Wes talking about what happened actually on the 22nd, on Wednesday, when there were another police created. I don't want to say it was a panic, but it was certainly a threat of sweeping the folks from the two dozen people from the camp. But I guess it was 418, 420 Bridges Avenue in Watsonville, where they'd gone. They moved from the Pajaro River in order to, at the order of the court, or at the actually the order of the authorities, no longer protected the residents there. The unhoused residents were no longer protected by the injunction, because the main argument that was used was, oh, this is land close to the public, this is land that is part of a river plain, although doesn't have the same danger of flooding at the benchlands does, as I understand it, or at least I haven't heard it placed described in those terms. It's still supposedly closed, and therefore it doesn't have the same kind of protection, let's say, that San Lorenzo Park got, even though the same judge or magistrate, I'm not sure, I guess he was a magistrate, Susan Van Coolen, heard the Pajaro River case as heard the San Lorenzo Park case a year ago, and came to a different conclusion. I guess she doesn't think the COVID crisis is that severe anymore, although it wasn't really put in those terms. This one was argued more in terms of the Martin versus Boise case, which is the court decision that says you don't jail people or force them to move unless you have adequate housing for them. It's narrower than that. You can't actually criminalize sleeping, sitting, lying, or camping unless you have adequate housing or adequate shelter for the people, indoor shelter for the people who are the entire homeless population, not just the people that you're demanding get out or move along. And very few cities have that. They made it a point not to. They don't want to encourage homeless people to come to their town. There'll be a magnet effect, don't you know? I'm, of course, quite sarcastic about that, and quite not just skeptical. I just think it's not true. You don't people don't come rushing to the town to get the wonderful shelter situations that Santa Cruz and other places offer. It isn't very wonderful. It's demeaning. It's inadequate. It doesn't deal with disabilities. It doesn't help many vets. Although there are some services that have become more vet-friendly, it's true, in the last year or so. Anyway, I think rather than go further than this, I'm going to let Wes kind of go into it. Wes White, the activist who you've heard probably quite regularly if you listen to these netcasts from Salinas, who is an active speaker at the different city council meetings. And in fact, they spoke at the Watsonville City Council meeting on, I guess it was Tuesday night. There was an emergency meeting of the city council, which was apparently determined to oust the people at the Bridge campground, which is camping in a parking lot, a public parking lot. And Anthony Prince had gotten a temporary injunction, or at least a filed for a temporary injunction. And I've been looking to try to get the more details of it, which were sent to me, but I'm having trouble locating the email, so can't give you the details. It was quite a long document. I was going to try to post it, but it's got many declarations, and it's got intensive arguments, and it's interesting, the parts of it that I did read. So maybe I will at some point try to do that, although it's really kind of moot now because it was... As you'll hear when you listen to Wes, in the hearings that took place today, and this is, I'm talking to you from Wednesday the 22nd, another magistrate, Judge Maxine M. Chesney, heard actually three hearings. One was at 8 o'clock in the morning. The next one was at 11 o'clock. It was first supposed to be at 10:30. It was postponed till 11. Then there was one that was supposed to start at 1 and that I guess got going at 2:30. I wasn't able to hear that one, but I got a report about it. And Wes does talk about it in this interview that you're going to hear. The issue had to do with vouchers for indoor housing. Were they all available for the people rather than simply the promises of the city, which was main intention was to demolish the encampment? They had trouble concealing their eagerness. Actually, they didn't try to conceal their eagerness to get rid of the encampment, even though they were rather vague about what they had. But they insisted that they had the necessary things, the necessary places for people to go. Anthony Prince, the other attorney for the homeless folks, insisted no, they don't, or they didn't. And that he himself had called the various shelters, and they did not have the available space, or there were problems involving ID with the motels. It looks like the encampment wants to go into is willing to take at least some kind of indoor shelter for a while, but they're only being offered, I believe, 5 days of shelter. Although the ultimate outcome of this was that there will be no movement, no forced sweep of the Bridge Avenue encampment in Watsonville until, I guess, January 2nd or January 3rd. But listen to Wes. I've been following it more closely. I think he was actually on the scene in Watsonville at the encampment through much of Tuesday. And, well, here he is. All right, so I'm talking to Wes White. It's Tuesday the 22nd. It's been a day of phone court hearings with, what's her name? Do you know the name of that judge?
Chesky.
Chesky?
Chesky,
C-H-E-S-K-A-Y. Chesky. Okay, well, Judge Chesky, and you had Prince and the Watsonville bosses in court. Watsonville city authorities and city attorney and all that. Of course, the defendants, or I should say the plaintiffs, the people who this affects, were never showed up, of course, or they weren't invited or some such thing, or didn't press their way.
The attorneys were present.
What's that?
Wasserville hired attorneys Austin and I can't remember the lady's name, but they farmed it out.
Yeah, no, what I was saying was that Anthony did not invite Monica to join him.
Oh, okay, I see.
And Monica did not press for that either. Anyway, so what I know that they were dickering around when they postponed the hearing, or when they finished their initial morning hearing. They talked about the judge wanted them to agree to be a sweetie and kissy kiss over the holidays, but then anybody who didn't agree to go once they were offered their vouchers, it was heads off with their heads, or let's get out in the rain, fuck you. So what happened at 2:30? I guess Prince was talking to say, look, everyone's agreeing to take the vouchers, though I don't know that everyone was. I wondered about that.
There was at least a dozen people that were really excited to take a voucher, and they were very disappointed that the city did not show up today.
Huh. Now, did the city agree to show up today?
Well, that was actually their morning agreement. We tried asking Anthony if they were coming, and he said that they hadn't told him anything. So we tried to call, and we just got voicemails. So obviously they're not coming today.
Now, how many people do not want to take vouchers or have certain doubts about it that require, the whole group being protected before, as Anthony kept saying before, but he didn't seem to be saying that today, Anthony Prince, the attorney. We don't want to have to draw straws. We want everybody to get vouchers, or we want everybody to be protected. And I guess if there's some people are, have concerns about the conditions laid down, and other people accept those conditions, does that mean the people who don't like the conditions get screwed?
So until January 3, there won't be an eviction, but on January 3, there will be an eviction. The city offered a 5-day voucher, which I guess was agreed to under the pretense that it's going to be extended. The city first initially offered 10 days, but only if you get out now. And apparently that offer was retracted later. So to the 5-day weather vouchers.
Was that offer late?
And the community action board would have to go out there to facilitate it, and getting all of that coordinated is not... apparently was not available today.
So was that proposal brought before the actual people who are going to be impacted by it, or was it all discussed at a high level by the expert attorneys?
I suppose the attorneys conferred, and, but the camp has been aware of the proceedings and listening to them and making their own decisions based on what's said. And as far as I know, I haven't really heard anyone saying, that they didn't want to go. Although the people are still concerned about downtown and folks in other areas behind Panda Express. There are other settlements in other places, and those folks are still being harassed and attacked. And of course, that's what we're expecting after the 5 days is over. So, if you want to go ahead and take away my housing, you better set me up in another housing forever. Otherwise, we'll be right back. And the judge was pretty adamant about that, too. What's going to happen in 5 days? What about 10 days? What happens after 10 days? What about the continuum of care? Sign them up. Community Action Board already said that there's no way they would be able to place 25 people within 5 days. Which we already knew that answer anyway.
And, of course, 10 days is a little bit more than 10 days takes us to January 3rd, right?
January 2nd or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Let me kind of broaden the scope of this discussion. There was earlier, of course, a resistance to the removal of people from the Pajaro River area, and that ended, I guess, when the injunction dissolved. And people...
December 5 and December 13 was when they slated to get rid of everybody, and on that day was the same day that it rained really hard.
But we heard a lot of wilder, I don't know if they're wilder or stronger, but certainly more numerous accounts of people, or the number of people that are actually were being divested of their tents and told to leave the levee and threatened with police arrest and so forth, then the 25 people who eventually, I guess, how many people made it into the Bridge Street encampment?
People, 25 people, yes.
And how many would you estimate were in the Pajaro River? I keep asking you this, and I know, you know, you haven't walked.
There are probably at least 50 there.
I know you people, I think there were 54 signatures of people looking for vouchers at one point. I think you may have.
Yes.
And so,
for that number.
Now, did those people, just the people that aren't part of this 25 encampment, did they disappear? Did they go to different places in Watsonville? Do we have any sense of what happened to them?
There are still some people that are out on the river waiting patiently for the county to come in and take their home. Apparently, even Watsonville come over on the Monterey County side to come and clear some people's homes.
And is there any excuse other than, oh boy, let's get rid of these ugly homeless people? I mean, is there any actual factual basis for, they have to environmental concerns, the floods up, anything that makes any sense in terms of this? Or is this just sort of a ritualistic, bureaucratic, annual extermination deal that they do, where they treat the homeless as so many pests?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's why I asked. So what about those people that were not part of this group? You say some of them have stayed on the river. Are you and the homeless union still in touch with them?
Monica is aware, and folks were talking about it today. It's all word of mouth, who knows who, who actually goes by there today. So there's always, that's the whole point of consistency, where are we going to put them so that way we can find them again.
Is there any phone communications with anybody who is still on the Pajaro River?
All I heard was that there was at least three people with places that were still there. Another two or three people got knocked out. that was the word, either by phone or by foot,
So that if that's the number of people that you've heard from, does that mean that the rest of the, I guess, 28 or 29 of the 54 people who aren't in the bridge encampment simply... Are they? Do we know if they're elsewhere in Watsonville? Do we know anything about their whereabouts?
Yeah, they should still be local.
And so, when you talk about the broader picture, when I asked you about it, of people of how Watsonville are being impacted, who are outside, not just in the bridge encampment, are we talking mainly about people who came from the Pajaro River? Are we talking about people who are already homeless in Watsonville, or are newly homeless in Watsonville?
Watsonville's got an ordinance, so we're concerned about everything else, especially after 10 days, how do we attack the unconstitutional ordinances? So that may require a different lawsuit.
And is Prince, have you spoken to him about whether that's likely to be happening? And also, because we have this situation here in the Benchlands, as the rain hits... And I didn't get out there today, but I went by Depot Park, and it seems to be pretty full up. It looks fuller than when I was there a few days before. That's the overflow area for the, the Benchlands, mostly the agreement camp, although probably for anybody that's tried to take their stuff and put it up in San Lorenzo Park on higher ground, and we're told, move it or... stay here and get a ticket, or leave it and we'll destroy it, is, I think, the three alternatives that they were offered, according to at least an interview or two I had with folks there. So in Watsonville, tell me a little bit about how things went today. You were slated to have a celebration today, right, of some kind?
Correct.
And was that just sort of an attempt to, kind of a merriment attempt to say, hey, come on, we won't just have you stand in the rain and wait to get arrested or wait to get some word from the police department if they decide to do this or just watch you and snicker. This is actually going to be fun. Did people show up with pizza and so forth?
Yeah, there was pizza, there is food. We had a small circle ceremony, that was it, I guess, at the moment. And we were kind of preoccupied with the court thing quite a bit, so we did it in between.
What were the major issues that were debated by the actual folks who are impacted by this whole thing?
They're still concerned. I mean, you know, what's going to happen? Is this only temporary? And then what happens after I get out of that 5 days? That was definitely one big thing. A lot of them were like, I can't wait to get a shower. So, but they're not getting it today for sure.
So, if, as I understand it, what the city attorney's office offered was, in fact, all they were really offering was, if you come today, we'll give you 10-day vouchers, but if you don't take them today, and if you do take them today, we'll bust the people who don't take them, because we'll assume they're saying no, they won't take them. Was this your understanding of what they were offering?
I'm not sure I understood the question.
Well, I didn't hear the 2:30 hearing, but I did hear the 8 o'clock hearing and the 11 o'clock hearing. And it was, I guess the question was, it seemed to me they wanted to, their main objective is to break up the encampment. And that issue about that being essentially treated as imminent harm for folks was not, I guess it got the judge interested, but it didn't seem to get either Prince or the attorneys for the other side terribly interested. Their main interest was in securing vouchers for people who wanted them, and for the rest of the people, oh well. Am I mistaken in that?
No, that was the basic offer. Take them away, their vouchers. What we're shooting for is the continuum of care, and if you're going to place them, well, then they need to remain placed.
Any discussion? I mean, is there any discussion of the fact that, I mean, I heard it mentioned that, you got a community spot where people can actually get clothing and warmth and some kind of community support in different ways, not just the broader community of, housed people, but also the people who are also unhoused who are living there and can help each other. Was there any discussion of the harm involved in breaking up this community, even if some of the people are skeptical about the value of going into individual rooms?
Yes, that's why the camp is not being broke until January 3, but some were supposed to go to vouchers, and that didn't happen.
Well, whether it's January 3 or December 22nd, was the issue ever brought up?
They're not relocating.
Sorry? Say that again?
We are looking at relocating.
I see. Okay, that's interesting. What kind of a support would you like from people who are in Santa Cruz who may hear this netcast?
Well, you can follow pajaro.rising on Instagram, Agents of Change 831, Community Before Cops.
Okay. So, in other words, I guess, if I understand you correctly, you're saying what may happen here is if vouchers are provided between now and January 3rd, some will go to take those vouchers when they're offered. Others may linger until the January 3rd and then take the vouchers, and then the rest will hang together as a group and move somewhere else, perhaps. Is that accurate? And if it is, do you mind my saying it publicly?
I don't think what you said is accurate, and I cannot repeat it to correct it. No, so people who have vouchers, series would only be for 5 days. If they get it now, they'll be back right there before the third. On the third, I guess we'll pack up and move somewhere else.
I mean, you think
on this public property?
Think the camp,
and then make it a new issue.
And will the camp?
And in that, we can roll in there the whole ordinance instead of just only the one camp.
Will the
that song was called Song for a Refugee, and Robix writes, on July 13, 2015, Hungarian workers began building a fence along its southern border, shutting down a route of migration for the hundreds of thousands of desperate refugees who were then fleeing war zones or dictatorships in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Eritrea, and elsewhere. Now back to Wes White on what happened in court on Tuesday, and what folks at the refugee camp for the Pajaro River residents are going to do.
But, at the same time, you know, there's going to be emergency status again, which is what the judge is not happy about.
Will the camp, you think, hang together for that?
They're not going to have much choice if they've only got 5 days and they're back before the third.
Well, that's a good point. So, ironically, in a way, the city attorney's failure to provide longer vouchers assures that there will be a... Well, I guess though, they could break up the camp...
That was the judge's concern, yes.
I mean, they could break up the camp by saying, we're only going to offer these vouchers when the rest of the camp agrees to leave, and so it may split the camp. Half may go to get the vouchers, half may... go somewhere, you know, leave and try to, as you say, find another spot. You follow?
Yeah, we'll be looking for another spot.
What I'm saying is the effect will diminish the number of people who are going to be in the camp.
I don't know. It could grow, too. I mean, you know...
Yeah.
That 5 days is not going to be long enough. And between now and January 3rd, so the city of Watsonville, and now has a thing on Instagram, if you look that up, city of Watsonville, they have an update. Is on. You want me to read it?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Today, a federal judge ordered that the homeless encampment on Frank Street remain in place until January 3. Between now and January 3, our staff will continue to offer temporary housing at local hotels and shelters for up to 25 people. Members, they don't mention 5 days. come January 3. City crews will then enter the site clean and clear the equipment. We'd like to see no room for the patients during this time. They're not very specific, are they?
No. Now, that may work to your benefit. I'm not sure. Because maybe not. I don't know. I'm a little murky on it myself.
The judge was very concerned about long-term goals and solutions, mm-hmm. and it was very, very clear that this was not it.
What was your reaction after listening to this string of hearings?
Well, I was eager to get the people who were eager to get into a hotel in. So we tried to call the city. They ignored and neglected us, sent us the voicemail. Then I tried calling Community Action Board, could not get an answer there either. So, obviously, they're not coming today.
Gotcha. How many people are community members who are housed, who are currently supporting the encampment in a direct way, say, on the spot, or were on the spot this morning?
On the spot this morning, maybe closer to 20 people.
Okay, so you had a total of about 50 people there?
We had U-Haul, and we had, actually, we got two U-Hauls. So people have been very active trying to support helping people move and everything, because we thought they were coming straight away at 8:30, even though the court hearing and everything. We've been just floating all day, bags packed, and at least our place is still up, so then we can just throw the bags back inside. But it was really irritating and stressful and traumatizing to still not know what you're doing and still be so confused, and no wonder nobody wants to participate in the city's programs.
How are the rains affecting the encampment?
They were sweeping everything away. They've made gutter trails so that it doesn't end up being a big pocket of water. The civic engineering thing happens pretty quick, and after the first flood, they were already sweeping all the puddles to be flat, but of course, it's going to rain, so we'll be back.
Is there much in the way of neighborhood, either hostility or support nearby from those who are either nearby?
There's been a lot of support. In fact, about four people rolled up and dropped off supplies and food, blankets and thermals and socks. And it's been really nice. About four people dropped off stuff today.
What kind
and,
of
and a few people walked by that we saw at the city council meeting and were very supportive as well.
What kind of what kind of businesses and residences are nearby?
Well, there's residences and there's a high school and there's a river. There's a Buddhist temple. It's mostly a residential area.
Huh.
It's right off of Riverside, so there's plenty of businesses there.
And what's your sense of how the businesses regard the encampment?
Probably the same way as tomorrow regards it, the city manager.
So with some hostility?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You got to admit, though, that those homeowners, they came to the public comment last night, night before. They were really... They changed their mind before the end of the meeting. They weren't quite so scared of it by the end. Like I said, a few of those folks actually walked over and said hello and was supportive.
Hmm.
So they realized that, people aren't the boogeyman they were worried about and scared of.
So the Watsonville City Council had an emergency meeting. How long did it last?
They had a closed session probably for about an hour and a half or something.
And after that?
Direction was given to staff and no action was taken.
And yet you were persuaded that there was likely to be an eviction because you were simply waiting for the judge to lower the boom.
If it hadn't gone to a court hearing Tuesday afternoon for Wednesday morning, the place would have been cleared.
And you say there was a lot.
In the afternoon, our court hearing for Wednesday 8 a.m., you know, yeah, that was specifically to preempt the clearing, as far as I can understand.
And how long was the public comment period, and when did it happen at the city?
It was about 45 minutes long, 6:30 on Monday.
And that was before the closed session?
Yes.
Huh. Is that standard? Have you ever seen that happen before?
Well, a lot of people knew there was closed session on existing litigation for the Watsonville Home Machine.
Hmm.
And you know, so there were homeowners that complained, and that's why there was a set of folks that were in there, you know, because they were the ones mostly concerned. And when you make a complaint, you know, a complaint has to have action. So of course they're gonna decide, oh yeah, no, we gotta get rid of them right now. And you know, upon closer inspection and hearing all this other community support and their own words saying that we need to be compassionate, they realized that they needed to change their stance. The housed folks of the residences right near the Lot 18.
Any word from Marina or Salinas about what's going on for homeless in the rain there?
No, just people hunkered down.
Gotcha. Well, I'm going to thank you and wind it up unless there's more you want to say.
Not at the moment. Yeah, no, it's been an exhausting day. Just really disappointed that Watsonville didn't follow through with the voucher thing, because that seemed to be their biggest issue. But when it came to actually paying for something, they didn't want to show up.
Well, you can always count on city managers to be city managers, or city manglers, as I like to call them.
That makes good sense.
Unfortunately, yes. Well,
So it is about coordination. If you don't have an answer, I guess the best answer is no answer.
Or just, you know, talk them to death, which is what I heard the city attorney kind of doing.
There you go.
All right. Well, I thank you, Wes. And again, if people want to follow this again and repeat those two or those three different sites that you suggested.
Okay. On Instagram, it's going to be potro.rising. And then also Agents of Change 831 and Community Before Cops.
And for those who don't have Instagram, Facebook, for the I looked on the Pajaro Homeless Union page on Facebook and didn't see much anywhere else.
There's an awful lot of all kinds of spaces everywhere, and keeping up on every single one of them cannot be attained.
I'm not critical. I'm just wondering where can people go who aren't Instagramists.
Okay, for Facebook, you can try Monterey County Homeless Advocates and Santa Cruz Homeless Union.
Okay, I will. That people can try that. And I guess I will just say thank you and collapse in a heap.
Excellent. All right, well, hopefully you can resurrect yourself tomorrow.
Well, yeah, that usually happens. Anyway, this will be played on Thursday night. Unless it gets bumped to Sunday, but or more exciting news comes up. In the meantime, are you at home now in a housed state, or are you still weathering the tent situation?
No, I'm in bed.
All right. Well, you take care, and we'll talk at you later.
All right. Okay. Let's go.
So this next David Rovick song is called Cobain, and he describes it briefly as follows. On July 20th, 2015, a suicide bomber detonated himself outside the Amara Culture Center in Surak, Turkey, just across the border from Kobe in Syria, killing dozens of left-wing youth from throughout Turkey who had gathered to provide aid to the besieged enclave of Rojava.
Rising started. There are many tales you could tell. One person's liberation may be another's prison cell. When authority collapses, many things can take its place. Sectarian nightmares and liberated space. Some are hunting for the heathens, set to form a caliphate. Some are fighting. in the north of Syria, just south of PKK. A city's name that's whispered in the wind, Kobane. The town grew up with the railway from Baghdad to Berlin. Soon became a refuge for those fleeing the Sultan. In Syria they called it Land of the Arab Spring. No one knew what movements history would bring. A city full of Kurdish people, divided from the rest, cut off to the east, forsaken by the west. The only sensible thing to do was run away. But instead, thousands stood and fought. Kobane. Men in Zurich, wise beyond their years, and the leaders of the world all shed crocodile tears. When the bombs went off, they said, this cannot stand. The same ones who kept the aid out from those who tried to lend a hand. The same men who kept the aid out, the very same ones who didn't want the PYG to have ammo for their guns. As to the future of the city, no one alive can say, but its name sails across the borders. Kobane.
And as I mentioned before, there was a memorial for the dead on Tuesday, two of them. And what you're going to hear now is Alicia Kuhl and some other folks reading names of the dead, talking about those who died in the year 2021, who were outside or had spent a significant portion of their lives outside, and to which their death can to some extent be attributed to conditions outside. At least that's how I view it. Well, if you want more information about this particular year of deaths, keep your eyes on the Indie Bay website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And that's where you can find, I'll probably be posting, as I said before, the official report. You can also try to reach the Homeless Persons Health Project and ask them about it, but I'll try and get the information out more directly.
On the streets of Santa Cruz for our unhoused community members. This year, the toll was 95 people died on the streets unhoused in Santa Cruz, and 56 people died that experienced unhoused in the past, so they were previously unhoused. And that includes they passed away in shelters and things like that. We're going to take some time and we're going to read off the names and the ages. In total, we have 151 people that passed away. You may know some of these people. You may recognize their names. And sadly, in fact, this may be the first time that you've heard that they've passed away. So I apologize for that. When we're finished reading off the names, we will ask if anybody would like to come and speak about these individuals. So I'll start reading the names. Abel Rodriguez. age 42. I'm sorry, Abel Rodriguez Alfonso, age 42. So I'll start again because Robert's list was a little bit messed up. So Abel Rodriguez, age 42. Alfonso Manzanares, age 46. Alfredo Rangel, age 79. Allian Collins, age 75. Alan Wilkerson, age 56. Amy DiBattista, age 36. Angel Meza Reyes, age 22. Angela Smith, age 48. Angus Andrews, age 44. Anthony Souza, age 86. Antonio Mendez, age 66. Ashanti Kraft, age 51. Aurora Malady, age 40. She was a beautiful artist. Barry Schuller, age 58. Bartolo Vivenzi, age 69. Bernardo Vidal Morales, age 60. Barry Kane, age 49. Brian Bailey, age 63. Brian Thomas, age 33.
And those are only the A's and the B's. Again, if you want to hear this whole list being read, I believe it was the list that was also read earlier on in that day at the Homeless Housing Matters program, which you can find online on the Huff website under Latest and Lost Shows. You can actually hear their pious sentiments and their, I'm sure some of them are quite sincere, and also the reading of all those names. So we skip now to the end of the list. Again, we're skipping about 100 names or more.
Victor Juarez Guzman, 54. Victoria Maldonado, 46. Walter Lilly, 60. Wayne Cunningham, 55. William Falzone, 72. And Zachary Appleman, 57. Moment of silence, and then if anyone would like to come up and say some words. Pass the mic.
That's it.
So if any of you know folks who have died outside, and you want to talk about it, remember them, talk about how you feel about it, talk about what you think the city did do and didn't do that was good and bad, you can, and you can use this.
I know some of the people.
Okay. So just real quick, I'll chime in again. Aurora Malady was a beautiful artist. She was a singer. She drew beautiful artwork. I mean, she was a painter. Her voice and her skills were just amazing. She was a beautiful soul. George Abraham. I knew George Abraham personally. He was so funny. He was like just like a big bear. He would always offer to help. He was really, really straight up and honest. He went to a lot of the AA meetings. A lot of people knew George Abraham. Awesome person. My friend Rachel Elias Meisenheimer, they went to the, were heavy in the goth scene here. Beautiful model. I mean, just a badass model. They did their own makeup, and it was like professional grade stuff. I mean, just beautiful. A person that should not have been taken from us at just 33 years old. So, you know, moment for my friend Elias. And I knew many other people, just in passing. And one thing that I share and I'll keep saying is that these were human beings, people in our community, not to be forgotten, and not just names that we say right now and then we forget about them and we start tallying up names for next year. That's not acceptable. We should have no more deaths on the streets here in Santa Cruz. We have solutions. We have empty motel rooms. I mean, our city leaders are failing us. There's a lot of money that gets mismanaged for things like this. And so there's just really no reason that somebody should die for any reason on the streets. There's just no reason for that.
And there are actually lots of bad reasons, but let's hear a little music. This is a Rovick song called Douglas McLeod, and about which he writes, in July 2015, a greedy developer named Douglas McLeod began destroying my neighborhood, cutting down old shade trees, demolishing old houses, and building big square new houses that appear to be made mostly of glue, which are so overpriced that nobody wants to buy them.
McLeod's a common name, though it used to be more common, way across the ocean in Scotland. But then developers came, and the McLeods all had to leave from the hills they call the Highlands. Lots of them came here to North America. There are some in Portland town. And there's one named Douglas who seems intent on tearing the whole city down. Yes, Douglas McLeod is a developer. He's developing his bank account by destroying nice old houses and cutting down old trees in order to increase the amount of money flowing into his coffers so he can use it to buy more and more. He may think he's a real nice guy, but he's rotten. Douglas McLeod is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shit. He got here in 99. Says so on his website. He came when there was money to be made. He came at a good time to buy low, sell high. Good time if you want to get paid. A good time to make the most of your money. A good time to invest. A good time to buy a lot and set your sights on buying the rest. Douglas McLeod is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shh. He's got the city council in his pocket, progressive though they claim to be. They may be progressive on some things, but not when it comes to cutting down trees that stand in the way of development, in the way of the bottom line. His company is called Blue Sky Property. Guess you gotta cut the trees down to let the sun shine. Douglas McLeod is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. Buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shit. You won't find much about him on the web. Maybe he's a private kind of guy. Maybe he's just old, or maybe he's just worried about getting a virtual black eye. Because if you poke around, you'll find a lot of people who feel just like I do, who think Douglas MacLeod is an idiot serving the interests of the privileged few. Douglas MacLeod is a developer, and I don't like him one bit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to shit. He's buying up the city of Portland town and turning it to...
And here's a story from the Mercury News. Monday, December 20th, tiny homes become big disappointment for some. Operators say they'll try to communicate better after occupants feel forced out. By Marissa Kendall. When Patricia Smith landed a spot in a tiny home community in unincorporated San Leandro, she thought her four-year ordeal with homelessness was over. The tiny home village was billed as a stopover on her way to permanent housing, and the 66-year-old Smith was eager to find a place she could afford on her monthly Social Security income of $1,388. But after a little more than 2 months there, Smith said she was told that her time was up and she'd have to move on after Thanksgiving. Now she's back to living in her car. For the first time in a long time, I thought, wow, I might be a normal human being again. And then to just pull the rug out from under me, Smith said, recalling her disappointment. Smith is one of several people who say they were informed their stays had expired and were told to leave before finding alternative housing or threatened with removal. This is exactly what happens to people who go into these shelter programs or take the kind of vouchers that the Pajaro River people are being offered for 5 or 10 days. They're just, after that period of time, they're right back where they started, on the streets, and they don't even have the property they had before because it's been taken either by the police or by thieves, unless they're lucky enough and have enough resources to store it somewhere. And that's what's going to be happening when the new camping ban goes into effect in Santa Cruz. The, I guess it's called the Community Standards and Services Ordinance. That's the sweetsy-poo name for this law passed by the reactionary city council last spring. Alameda County's Housing Department and Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, the nonprofit managing the site, blame the trouble on communication blunders, kinks in a new model, and the Bay Area's lack of affordable housing options. They say everyone who has left was offered a spot in another shelter, a claim some program participants deny. The complaints at the tiny home village, which opened 3 months ago, highlight a broader challenge because even as Bay Area cities and counties find ways to get people off the streets, moving people from these temporary solutions into long-term housing is proving difficult. But it's nice for them, those so-called service providers who claim to be doing this kind of a navigating to get lots of grants from the government to be navigating people, usually in one door and out the other. With the COVID-19 pandemic came a new push to move unhoused residents, who experts feared would be particularly susceptible to the virus, into short-term shelters with private rooms where they would be protected from infection. This was not, of course, the case in many Santa Cruz shelters, and it was opposed by the Santa Cruz Homeless Union and by HUF, because the virus was considered particularly deadly in those days, at least deadlier than the flu, and people in group settings were vulnerable to it. Although, interestingly enough, homeless people seem to have shown themselves to be unusually resistant, either because they haven't had it before, because something about living outdoors has given them additional resistance capabilities. It's not too clear, but it does seem to be the case. New tiny homes sprang up in Oakland and San Jose, built modular communities with private apartments. But now as the hotel programs wind down, counties are scrambling to move residents into permanent housing. Alameda County has found spots for more than 1,100 people who are in hotels and other temporary COVID-19 shelters, Actually, they're just scrambling to get them out of the hotels because they are no longer have the financial support from the state and federal government, or simply because they don't need to keep them there because the excuse of COVID is gone. There always are people who fall through the cracks. That's my analysis. And San Leandro's new program suggests tiny home sites won't be immune from that struggle. The project located in the county's Fairmont campus is really two programs in one. 19 of the tiny homes are for people who are waiting for permanent housing. As long as they're actively working with the staff on a housing plan, they can stay until they found housing, according to the county. The other 15 tiny homes are short-term medical respite units for people recovering from illness or medical procedures. They generally have 45 days. Sandra Erskine, a 74-year-old diabetic, moved into one of the medical respite homes after she passed out from extremely high blood sugar and ended up in the hospital. Though she was offered an affordable apartment in Oakland, Erskine said she later found out she didn't qualify because she wasn't an Oakland resident. She was told to leave November 19th and moved into her car, she said. Now she's in a convalescent hospital recovering from kidney issues. As soon as they got us medically stable, we were out on the street, Erskine said, and I ended up in the hospital. Smith also landed in a medical respite unit, though she says she didn't know that when she moved into the tiny home. She was in excruciating back pain. She has that, which she suspects was caused by years of living in her car. It didn't get any better while she was in the program, Smith said. Donald Frazier, executive director of Building Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency, also known as BOSS, after the initials, B-O-S-S, said staff members are working on improving their messaging so participants will have clear expectations about the program going forward. I'm not going to comment what I think about that kind of language. Certainly our partners and all concerned need to do better with that communication, he said. Smith, he said, was referring to two different homeless shelters, but declined both and told staff she'd move in with a friend. He said Smith was referred to two different homeless shelters. We do not put people out on the streets, Frazier said. That is not what we do. But Smith said she never received a referral to a shelter. She sleeps on a friend's couch occasionally, but doesn't want to wear out her welcome, so she stays mostly in her car at the San Leandro Marina. Carrie Abbott, director of Alameda County's Office of Homeless Care and Coordination, said staff members are reexamining the program to see how it can be run better. Ideally, she said, people who recover from their medical problems will be transitioned to the housing side of the program. The problem is there aren't enough tiny homes for them, nor is there enough permanent housing. Staffers have applied for housing vouchers for residents in the non-medical homes, which should start arriving in the next few weeks, Frazier said. But the county is having trouble finding enough landlords willing to rent to homeless people. I mean, why rent to the poor when you can get the wealthier class? Donna Onstad, 53, and Kevin West, 46, each say they were told that they have to leave their tiny homes earlier this month. After this news organization inquired, both were granted last-minute extensions. West, who is recovering from a hip replacement, said he would have gone back to a tent on the railroad tracks. Onstad said she was offered a shelter in Richmond but couldn't accept because she couldn't take her beloved cat, Booger. Onstad and West hope the reprieve will give them enough time to find housing. Abbott is hopeful, too. We have a lot of confidence that we will get kinks out of the system, she said, and hopefully move towards a lot of really successful, happy housing placements from the site. She probably has a very happy housing placement herself, as well as a happy housing placement job. And that's the article from Monday's December 20th Mercury News, Tiny Homes Become Big Disappointment for Some. And now back to the homeless, I can't quite call it homeless run, homeless memorial, but I would say it was somewhat more grassroots than the establishment Zoomed homeless memorial and also done in person on a feeding or a meal area that was used daily by folks who are outside, as well as people who aren't always outside but have enough trouble making ends meet food-wise. So some thoughts came out of that, which you're now going to hear.
I came down here because I saw the flyer, and I'm holding this, and I'm seeing one of my friends that I didn't know passed away. And she was 26. She was 26. And I didn't know she died. She's 26. It's just wrong. It's so wrong. And I just, rest in peace, Shay.
Oh, my God. Sorry.
Anyone else want to say something? Share anything? Share maybe your experience, survival tips, anything?
Just press the trigger. And get it. Keep it close to you for best results.
Mask on or off?
I want to remember Gary Oriarte. We knew him as Chief, and he could be a real hard case to be around many times. And he could be the kindest friend I could have. People aren't 100%. Nobody is. I love the man, and he would be out of control many times. And we can't overlook the goodness in every one of these people. And too many times to get dismissed and written off, they're not our kind of perfect. But everybody I know on this list has shown to me some real goodness. It's another man, 77 years old. He owned a restaurant on the west side. Hugo Noroyan. His daughter became a city councilwoman. But somehow he wound up unhoused and sick and not cared for. So let's care for each other while we still have a chance.
If this were a war, if he were a soldier, he would find a well defensible position. He'd put on body armor if he were a sniper, set his sights with terrible precision. If this were a war, he was somewhere overseas, he'd be watching out for the other side, watching for the Taliban or whichever enemies kept on trying to blow him open wide. If this were a war, he'd be dodging shells aimed at him for being on the street. He'd be on alert for any sign that tells that the soldier might be drawing heat. If this were a war and he were being shot, he'd be under orders to shoot back. If he'd learned the lessons from the training that he got, he'd carefully prepare his counterattack. If this were a war and the enemy wore blue, he'd be looking for signs of it everywhere. If he was in good form and his aim was true, he would pick them off and center his crosshairs. If this were a war, not a Dallas parking lot, he'd be be getting medals for this firefight. If he were a soldier, he'd be praised for every shot he fired from above that deadly night. If this were a war, 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 if this were a war.
That was If This Were a War. On July 7, 2016, five cops were shot and killed by Micah Xavier Johnson, a young man who was in a parking garage overlooking a parking lot in Dallas, Texas, following a march against police violence. Micah was a sniper with military training and was a very good shot, though one civilian was shot in the leg. It was clear from social media posts that Johnson was upset about racist police killing black people in the U.S. on a daily basis. The Dallas police killed him by using an improvised robotic suicide bomber that they sent onto the floor of the garage he was on.
Say a couple more words. I did, sir.
Can I use it? You just put it here and push that.
Say how residual we are.
Yeah. Got it?
Hello? I wanted to talk about a young man named Phoenix that you probably knew. The dreads. The funniest person I've ever met in my life. And he took a chance. And he did age one day, and it was laced with the bad stuff, and he keeled over dead. In his early 30s. That's pretty much it. That's all I have to say.
And you miss him.
I miss him terribly.
And he
made everybody laugh. Yeah. Everyone. It didn't matter what mood, he would get a good mood going.
I still see him.
You want me to say last call for jackets over there by the silver van?
And Alicia says it's the last call for jackets. If you're looking for a jacket, over at the black car over there.
No, the silver one.
Thank you. Silver car. Looks black to me, but...
It's not black.
How it's got a bunch of jackets on top of it, whatever color it is.
Earth colorblind.
The name that stands out to me on this list is Jane Butler. She was someone that I didn't meet even until the day she died. And I remember seeing her face with no life in it, looking up at the sky right before they covered it. I couldn't even take it. I went back to my tent and cried for 2 hours. Then there was some sort of disturbance I come out for. And then people played music. And everybody got back to business as usual, homeless business as usual, which isn't always terrible. I wish people would understand that your homeless neighbors, if you were to do a cross-section and compare them to what I call the grid zombies or what we call the normies, you're going to find the same percentage of addiction, the same percentage of intelligence, the same percentage of family abandonment. And that's a two-way street. A lot of homeless people get blamed for leaving their families. But a lot of times we're dispatched, we're exiled from our families and our homes because of our addictions sometimes. But, you know, sometimes it's actually because of our family's addictions and our lack of them. There are a lot of white sheep among the homeless. And I really believe that from what I learned of Jane after her passing, she fit that description. So I'm a believer, and I believe that life doesn't end when our heartbeat stops, and that there is a hereafter that the King of Heaven and Earth is in charge of. And up there, there's perfect justice, there's perfect love, and there's actually no need for hope because everything that we've ever wanted is fulfilled. So I pray that everyone on this list, at their theophany, at their meeting of their Maker, all their dreams and wishes and hopes are fulfilled and that they want for nothing.
Hi, everyone. I just want to say I'm, since coming out to meet people living outside in the last year and a half, I've just met so many amazing people. I'm, like, eternally grateful to be met with caring and kindness and comradeship. And it's heartbreaking, and I'm also infuriated. I'm livid, absolutely, at the failures of years, decades, months, and, you know, I'm sure the months to come. So I'm sorry, and the more we stick together and work with each other and look out for each other, the better it can be, you know?
I believe that.
Yeah, we're all in this together.
So I know very few of the people on this list personally, or if I do, I only know them by their street names, and I don't really recognize them here. I did know Ricardo Lopez, who I have many times done interviews with, because I do free radio on the net interviews. I record his music. I record his, more important for me often, is the kind of justice work he did, standing up for people that were living in the river, actually, the riverbank in the summer. He would outwit and outflank the Parks and Rec people who came to harass them, although they had no legal place to be, as still is the case in Santa Cruz. So if you ever want to hear Ricardo talk about anything, you can go to listen to the old broadcasts, because they're available on the Huff website, Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And I'll leave some cards on the table in case you want to locate. Some of these people may also be there, though, and not usually by this kind of name. If you know their street name, you probably can find them more easily. I also distributed, as I said, a flyer, because I'm concerned with the flood and what the city did in the last flood, which is ticket people, at least one person I know of, who tried to save his property by moving up to the San Lorenzo Park area that was above the flood line, the duck pond area. And a number of people did this. And what the city did, according to some angry folks who suffered what the city did, was they said, you move from here immediately or we ticket you, even though it's raining heavily. And the only thing you can do is go into this parking garage, which was across the way. And you couldn't take all your property there. You could only take a certain amount. People were trying to save their property. I'm afraid it's going to happen again because there's another rain coming, probably not as bad, according to the predictions, as the current rain. But, you know, still, I remember a year ago when the community stood together and homeless folks and the community confronted the police and said, no, this is wrong. That was on December 28th. And then Alicia and the Homeless Union got together with Anthony Prince, and they got an injunction that for 6 months stopped this. Now what we're finding is, I don't know what we're finding. I'm wondering what people are going to do next, and that's what this flyer is about. So I encourage you to read it, think about it, talk about it, and then maybe do something about it. I don't know. I don't live out there, so it's not my say. These are just my thoughts. Are other people who know folks on this, or maybe folks who aren't on this list who have died, want to talk? Because this is a time you can.
Anybody else want to say anything?
Yeah, yeah. I would like to sing a song. It's a healing song. It's a crying song. 10 people go back to my friends.
Hey ya, willow, hey ya, hey ya, willow, hey ya, hey ya, ya,
willow, hey, 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 ya, hey, ya, hey, hey, ya, hey, ya, now it's yellow, hey. Cola, lay me warm, a yonk, yo, hey, lay me a child, now it's yellow, hey. Cola, lay me a child, now it's yellow, hey. Hey, ya, hey, ya, ya, oh, willow, hey, ya. Willow, hey, 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 ya, hey, ya, ya, willow, hey, 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 ya, hey, ya, hey, hey, ya, hey, ya, now it's yellow, hey, cool, I'll lay me warm, a yonk, yo, hey, lay me a jar, now it's yellow, hey, cool, I'll lay me a jar, now it's yellow, hey, 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 hey. Hey, now it's here now, hippie, or whatever. He's in the fire, or whatever.
Thank you, that was a beautiful healing song. It's terrible that anyone should lose 10 people in 1 year.
Hey, let's not be sad. These are spirits that are with the Creator now. And don't we all want to be there? Don't we hurt? Aren't we trying to heal? But it's so hard because nobody listens to us. We're just like forgotten. And it rips my soul apart because we all have a place in the middle of our back. We cannot fucking scratch. It tells us we need help. And the hardest thing for us as human beings to do is say thank you when somebody gives us a gift, because we don't think we're fucking worthy, because we're living this way and we're doing this shit. We are not fucking worthy. Fuck that. The Creator made us all beautiful and perfect. Your spirit is perfect. Where we fail is that being humans to each other because of the color of our skin or this or that or all this tyranny. Don't live in tyranny. The key to all our problems is love. Everything else is irrelevant. Sticks and stones that building is made of, right? Oh, if it burns down or blows up, some other rich dude will make a new building. But if you blow up, I can't replace you. I cannot replace you. And that's where my sorrow comes in. Because they think we're replaceable, and we're not. Don't give into it. Don't give into it. Stand up. Either lay down and be fucking mounted, or stand up and be fucking counted. A home and talk you up. All my relations.
All my relations. Does anybody else want to say anything? If not, we're going to conclude the memorial and thank everyone for coming. Thank you all for sharing your hearts with us. Everyone will be missed, but not forgotten.
And now back to the Benchlands. Actually, this was the day before that memorial. I walked through the Benchlands and kind of trying to... I was giving out flyers, and I was giving out copies of the list of the people who had died in 2021, as well as the question of where can people go if the next rains hit, as they have been hitting the last few days, and suggesting that people get together and consider supporting each other, whatever they're doing, but go to the most obvious place, which is what the Union of the Homeless Activists were suggesting some months ago, but never really organized for, or perhaps tried to organize for, but couldn't get enough support for, or didn't have enough organizing skill to get it together. I don't know what the story was. And Huff bears that responsibility, too. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. Well, here's some of the interviews that I... That's very few in the Benchlands after the flood. I should say after the first flood, and before the next one. And it's a... Well, it's evening. About 5 after 5 on December 20th, Monday, in San Lorenzo Park. next to the duck pond. And I don't see any tents between the duck pond and the children's playground. There are some porta potties, but no tents toward the Soquel Bridge. It's about 5:20. It's on December 20th. I'm down here in the I guess it's the Soquel Bridge end of the agreement camp, and talking with. And you're Tim.
Oh, my name is Tim Bone. Yeah, Tim.
How long a resident are you?
Well, I came here in October, and I was looking for a place that I could afford, and the price was right here.
Indeed.
So I've been here a couple months, October, November, and now December, so almost 3 months.
How has the agreement camp been treating you?
Yeah, I know my neighbors, and, I play poker with them, and...
Who wins?
I won.
See, you're a card sharpie.
Yeah, we got another game on the table. It's in Texas Hold'em, and, it's a nice way to make a few friends with your neighbors.
You make a few bucks?
Yeah, sure. It made 15 bucks.
Well, the reason I stopped to do this interview with you, and while I'm kind of pausing from giving out these flyers, is... you mentioned that you tried to relocate from the flooded area here. We see a lot of debris, tents pulled down, piles of stuff, which I understand also there were some people who very, very narrowly got out of it, some of the older folks. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely true. It was a flash flood, definitely. The river expanded pretty quickly, and some people were lower, closer to the river, and were evacuating with water at their ankles, trying to get their things out of their tent.
And you?
I was a little better off, but I was trying to run from it as well.
And did your tent get flooded?
I managed to stay ahead of it.
There you go.
I was just a little bit ahead of it, but my feet were sure wet as I was walking around, and all my things were getting damp as I was moving.
And you set your tent up near the duck pond area?
Yeah, not far, just about 30 feet from where my tent was, just uphill from it in the grass, just to get away from the storm overnight. And cops came to me 3 times telling me, you're going to have to move across much, much further in the rain, really pouring down hard. And I'd also been told by other people that, no, the city's going to let us wait out the flood, which seemed much more reasonable instead of, sending myself really far. And it's just impossible to move as many things as I have. So I knew, looking at my neighbors, too, it was just an impossible task. And there were a couple of vehicles that came by to help people move, but it was...
To help them move from down here to up there?
To the parking structure. There were a couple of vehicles that came by.
Just to the parking structure, not to the park.
Yeah, just to go, yeah. And it didn't seem like it was going to be enough for most people. So honestly, it was just very confusing. It all happened really quickly. And they asked me to abandon my stuff late at night or get a ticket. And so I chose the infraction route, which in hindsight, I realized I could have just moved somewhere else. I think I was one of the only people who got a ticket.
Well, you can also challenge it in court based on a necessity defense. It was serious flood and situation. In fact, they may not even take it to court.
Yeah, I'm looking into that at the moment.
If you want, give me a call. I'll give you my card if I haven't already. I gave you my card.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, so unfortunately, it seems like this is going to be a problem for this camp for now. It seems like they're going to shut it down, the Dakota camp, which is an agreement camp, which is like you don't do your drugs in the open, you don't steal from neighbors, you don't create a problem for the people who pay rent nearby. You try to be basically a good citizen is the idea. You take care of your waste material correctly. You don't throw trash in the water.
And for those who are regular listeners to this show, you probably know what he's talking about when he says the Dakota camp. That's the smaller fenced-off camp area that was between the footbridge going over to San Lorenzo Park from River Street and Soquel Avenue, the Soquel Bridge. It contained, I don't know, I heard different estimates, I'm guessing 40 or 50 people. And I guess remember Aaron Horseman, who you heard talk in a previous show, was very angry at how the city gave no assistance in bringing people helping people to move their stuff up from the flooded areas and the potentially flooded areas, not just in the main bench lines, but particularly in the south end. The Dakota Camp, Agreement Camp area. And he was really angry about that. People almost lost their lives. That's what what everyone's talking about here, or at least that's what the two of us are talking about.
So I think that they're going to take these fences down and put it somewhere else, but it's all sort of in flux, and I'm not knowledgeable about it, but it's a little sad to me to see how many people here had lived here all year and are now, their stuff is once again a chaos, and their hopes and dreams are somewhat on pause maybe as they try to figure out where to go next.
How did you find the no theft rules worked for you?
Oh, just anything for people to have an agreement, I think, is a positive. Because
did it work? Did you lose anything?
Actually, I was really lucky. Yeah, amazingly, every day I came back, my things were still there. I'm very grateful for that.
Was this the case of the experience of most people here or not?
I think overall compared to other campsites that I've heard on the other half outside of the fence that people have had really serious problems with it, and I think we've had less problems here.
Have you heard of any problems here at all?
Oh yeah, I'm sure that there's still plenty of issues to be had.
Because of what you've heard or just a suspicion?
Both, yeah, both. Just overhearing and, living here, you hear things. And then
any friends of yours complain, this is gone? Or, wow, I'm glad I haven't had any, property's been safe for the last 2 months.
Yeah, I definitely heard of people complaining about not being able to find things and thinking somebody stole them. But it hasn't been a rampant problem. It's been much less than I expected. Like I said, I've only been here, a little less than 3 months. But in that time, I've been pretty grateful at how stable it was as a place to be.
Now, I see people kind of carrying around kind of wagons, kind of hauling stuff out or away, or maybe to the dump. I'm not sure what they're doing. I guess I'll have to ask them. How many people would you say are returning to the camp to set up again, and are you still living here?
Yeah, I think they're trying to close it. I see that there's area closed signs on all the fences now, and I've heard they're trying to shuttle people over to Depot Park. So I think there's not a lot of good answers as far as where people are going. I think they're going to kick me out of this area and call this area closed and send us over to the other half of the park, is what I think is going to happen.
And having your phone number, I will probably call you to see what the outcome of all this is. Any other thoughts?
I'll know a lot more in a month. Right now, it seems like I'm in the middle of it. The first 2.5 months were super stable. It was a nice, simple situation for me to get back on my feet and make some better decisions in my life. But now there's a lot of confusion.
Where were you living before?
I had a place to live in town.
And did you run out of money? Did you get kicked out for being a bad tenant?
No, I just got priced out of my situation, and I needed to come up with something else, and wasn't able to afford something in time, and this seemed like a reasonable stopgap.
You're still working?
Yeah.
How's the job treating you? Are you getting any? Are you likely to keep it?
Yeah, I'm going to try to keep making money because that keeps me alive.
Money, money, money. And again, we've been talking with...
Oh, my name is Tim, Tim Bone, just another Santa Cruz person.
Anything else?
Well, maybe you'll hear more from me, Robert. Nice talking to you today. All right.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
With
Brian Funk, a.k.a. Panther.
And Panther, you're moving your tent. What's this about?
When it flooded here, we moved our stuff from the Dakota Landing, which is a pilot project that we're running for us homeless, to up top where you can see us in the upper part of the park. Multiple times during the night, I was told I could be arrested or detained or ticketed if I don't move my stuff again down from up top to this landing again. So I did, and this is a real hassle.
How much stuff did you have to move to and from?
A lot. I'm moving 3 people because I have 2 girlfriends.
And the sun was out and it was beautiful weather.
Yeah, it was ice cold. It just was raining off and on. That was a rainy night. And right now, I've been moving since, all week. I've just been moving.
Moving right now?
I'm moving right now. I'm moving stuff from the landing over here, and then I hope we're told we're going to move again. And because I didn't go over across the way to the second tier, I didn't get a special voucher to go to devote a parking lot or a hill or whatever, but it's okay. Whatever. But they're supposed to have a spot for us because we're a pilot project. They're supposed to go and have a spot for us on River Street, but they haven't finished it yet, and I don't know where it is, you know, because it makes no sense. We're like moving like five or six times when we just need to do one exodus. So, and we tried to take over Harvey West again, Friendship Park, but unfortunately the person didn't listen when I said we had to come in a troop, not just one person. He went solo, and the cops told him that if he comes over, he'll be arrested, and all stuff will be thrown away. So, yeah. So it's just one of the great things we have to, you know, deal with here. And it's ice cold again. But, yeah. And,
well, if I got your number, I'll call you when you're not so busy, man.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Unless there's more you want to say.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
And we've been talking with
Brian Funk, a.k.a. Panther.
Thanks, Panther.
And I'm not sure why the quality of that was so bad. I think it may have been because the rain was starting and falling on the recorder, but that might not have been it either. Still, you can hear some of it. Panther's an old-timer who's known me for, well, he remembers me longer than I've remembered him. So, but he was sort of a, well, he reported to me on the camp, and I had hoped to get back to him for longer interviews, the Dakota Agreement Camp, as I said, the camp that was kind of literally, I don't know if it was set up by Brent Adams or just strongly supported by Brent Adams as a part of this notion of bringing in agreements with the community to somehow get the critics on your side, which I've been rather skeptical of, if not critical of, but people enjoyed being in that camp, and I heard positive reports from it, so there's certainly that's a consideration.
Robert Ross was from Ross Trevor. He was born in County Down. His family was given land there by the British Crown. He was a man born of the gentry, born with wealth and fame. But he joined the British Army to serve his queen and make his name. In the Napoleonic Wars, he fought in many lands, in Holland and in Spain and the far-off Egyptian sands. He was wounded there in battle, came back to fight another day, and he was sent off to attack the USA. York had been sacked and burned by invading Yankee men, but the Canadians regrouped, chased the Yankees home, and then the British Navy made its way to the shores of D.C. town, where General Ross burned the White House down. The year was 1814. The U.S. was in retreat. It was a Canadian victory, an American defeat. Without the French to help them, they got their ass whipped by the Crown when General Ross burned the White House down. Place had just been constructed only 12 years before, but it had to be rebuilt soon after this disastrous war. The president turned tail and ran like a raggedy clown when General Ross burned the White House down. He was killed a few months later. Irish rebels stopped him in his tracks. He was buried in Nova Scotia in the town of Halifax. He might have been forgotten, but he'll forever be renowned. He's the man who burned the White House down. He's the man who burned the White House down.
The man who burned the White House down. On August 24, 1814, David Rovics writes, "The White House, Congress, and the Supreme Court were torched by a British naval force led by General Robert Ross." It was 1814, but this was in the course of what people in the U.S. now know of as the War of 1812. rather than a British attempt to retake the colonies, as is often portrayed inaccurately in some U.S. history books, the war was started by a U.S. military invasion of Canada and the wholesale burning down of the city of York, now Toronto, Canada. Canada was invaded to teach a lesson to those Canadians who dared give safe haven to escaped slaves from the U.S. Civilian homes in York were destroyed along with government buildings. General Ross was comparatively merciful, limiting his destructive efforts to U.S. government buildings, all of which had only recently been built. And jumping around a bit, here's another brief interview with a guy who was staffing the clothing table at the Funabom's daily meal, but in this case it was the Memorial Day when the memorial reading of the dead was happening.
With, oh boy, Sonny Boy Williamson.
And Sonny Boy, you're a person who's kept a pretty close eye for the last couple of decades on the homeless scene in Santa Cruz, also the social service and provider scene. You were thinking about our new, I don't know what he's called, homeless czar.
Yeah.
He doesn't really call himself a czar, I guess, but his name is Larry.
Lee Butler, I'll guarantee you.
You know, he's not, but Lee Butler is his superior, I guess.
Yeah, but I laugh about when he was kind of by default given authority over unhoused people's jeopardy and punishment and cruelties.
Lee Butler or Larry Inwell?
Yeah. In any event, no, he didn't want the job, and at least this guy has signed up for it.
And this is, he came from Monterey County, right?
Exactly. Salinas, more specifically. And if you haven't done any homework on the Salinas history of treatment and cruelty towards unhoused people in their traditional Chinatown, it's very telling. And some things parallel Santa Cruz. But restaurateurs and other merchants have been very clear that any aid should be across the tracks and ideally behind a fence, and any tents, encampments allowed, has to know they can be swept away periodically. Salinas has an interesting background, but Larry Inwell, as far as I can tell, had nothing to do with any social service provision to unhoused people. He was an overseer of funding for a lot of nonprofits that I'm sure are doing real good work in different ways, but not lowest income helps.
So by good work, you mean getting them a lot of grants.
Exactly. And there's a role for that, no doubt, but not at the expense of effective improvement in people's lives.
Some people's lives, people get to spend the money.
That's right. It provides constant employment, as we've learned, for a certain class of people.
And good education for those people getting their college degrees.
Indeed. In any event, Robert Norris tells me we should definitely not slam people before we get to know them, and so I certainly don't want to do that to Larry Inwell, but we have good expectations of his professionalism being effective, not just the jive that for 30 years the magic dance that public officials have done with their backs turned to people who need housing. That's the end of my sermon.
Well, thank you, Reverend. And we have been talking. Reverend Sonny Boy. Thank you, Reverend. We'll talk to you again at some point.
Very good.
All right, then. So we're it's about 3:00 on the 22nd. I'm here at
Lot 27.
I'm talking with James. Hey, James.
Hey, James. Here.
Saint James. Yes. And you said you suffered an assault recently.
I was sitting down and having a cigarette, and this woman came up and started telling me about her family history.
Right.
Her mom, her dad, her brothers, her sisters, and, you know, her grandma and grandpa, and, you know, the whole family story. It took an hour.
You're more patient than I am.
And I was just sitting there smoking. I didn't say anything to her. But then her wannabe boyfriend comes up after I went to bed at 10:00, like I normally do. And I was sleeping comfortably, peacefully. And this guy comes in my tent and starts kicking me in the back. I had to go to the hospital.
You have a band on your left wrist?
Yes, I do. I've been to the hospital, just got out a few days ago. But it...
Any ribs broken?
Yeah. Fractured a rib. Probably damaged a kidney. I did file a police report. Because the cops showed up shortly thereafter. Well, I'm on the way to the hospital in Watsonville, which actually, the Watsonville hospital treated me rather well.
And that was unlike the Dominican?
Well, the staff was a little more professional, I would have to say.
How did it manifest itself as professionalism?
What's that?
How did it? When you say professional, how would one notice this?
Well, I pay attention to the nurses, and, you know, the staff there was quite professional.
Huh.
And I appreciate their kindness and their... they gave me a bus pass.
Which wouldn't have been done at Dominican? Or?
They gave me a bus pass on a Saturday, but the buses don't run on a Saturday. They neglected to tell me that.
I see.
So I sat for 2 hours outside in the cold, waiting for the bus that never showed up. And I finally had to call a cab and get down to the Watsonville Metro, which is no big deal. But all in all, because Dominican lost my leather jacket on one of my visits there. Lost my leather jacket with all my keys in it and my plastic ID and all the cards and everything. Bank cards, which I replaced. And no, but they lost a leather jacket. A really nice, expensive leather jacket with all my keys in it.
Another jacket, right?
No, that's a different one.
Oh, all right.
But, Dominican completely screwed me because they lost all my keys to the shop, to the house, to the car, to the storage, everything gone. And my IDs and my bank card.
How long ago was this?
I was in March. I was in there for 30 days with pneumonia. Then I had to get readmitted in, I think, April or May with pneumonia again. And
living in the Benchlands at that time?
Yes, I was. But, yeah, I lost my apartment because I was... I was due on the rent and stuff like that. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible year for me. 21 is not a good year. I wish I could hope for the best and plan for the worst.
How are you coming along with the rib healing, if it's healing?
I've been sitting here for the last 3 days in this chair.
Right.
Because I can't lay down. I can't roll over. I can't stand up. I can hardly barely walk. That's why I've got the walker.
You're pointing to the walker in front of you.
Yes, I have a walker. I look like an old man. Well, I am an old man.
Me too.
And I'm not getting any younger, but I'm going to heal. I'll survive. And it's hard to kill a Dylan.
But you look like you're hanging in there. You know, if all this shit happened to me, I don't know what I'd do.
I can survive darn near everything. I've been all over the world. Been through several continents. I'm not fazed by rain or inclement weather. That doesn't bother me. I have plenty of good friends that have been helping me, feed me, take care of my needs. I don't have many needs, but Everything in my tent's gone. All my recording equipment, gone. Effects processors, vocal processors, a bag full of microphones.
Probably $1,000. Walk away?
While I was in the hospital for a month. Yeah, somebody pilfered my tent and bagged everything. Three laptops, a Dell touchscreen, a MacBook Pro, and another Asus, which everything's gone. And you know what? I don't care. Because I'll get better microphones next time, and I'll get better laptops than you've ever seen before. And I still have a whole storage locker full of computers and laptops and stuff like that. And I'm not fazed at all. It's going to be like a headwind for a sailor. Yeah, I'm not fazed whatsoever. Yeah, I'm going to continue on, and I'm going to plow through this, and it'll be okay.
Take it.
Then, my name is St. James, and I approve of this message.
Thank you, man.
God bless you, Robert.
And you too, man. Steve, tell me, what is this crazy shit?
It's asinine character. Yeah, you know what I mean. I'm tired of it being attacked. Psychology or whatever. They have no paperwork, no documentation of any kind of doctoring to offer whatsoever.
So
I've already been through the mill already for that.
So are you being accused?
I'm sane.
You're being accused.
More sane than they.
They're accusing you of being a crazy man.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, do people hear is that you're crazy?
No.
Well, that's what counts.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I do all I can.
Right.
And I don't need to be knocked down while I'm doing it.
Take it.
I'm a disabled man, okay? It's wrong to kick the man.
Let me take you under the...
Wrong to begin with.
So you don't... Let me get you in here where you can actually get dry.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Steve.
I had to get off my chest. There's a lot on my chest.
Anything you want to add?
Well, all I can say is give love as much as you can, because no one knows what it is out there. And when you find it, give as much as you can of it, because it needs to be out there. Not just me. You give it all I can. But people give, you know, if they don't make it better, they're part of the problem, not the solution. Okay? They make a sad song and they can't make it better. They're part of the problem.
There you go. Period.
Thank you, Steve.
No worries.
I don't know what anybody would do with them.
Hey, they could boil them. How many do you want to put
in? Lee is here.
For a start, I'm not a big fan of memorials for the dead. I want to see a celebration of life for people that manage to survive and sometimes even thrive in a manner that doesn't cause the deaths of people and the invasions of countries and things like that. But that's just me. But beyond that, I just walked by a community service officer's vehicle, and every time I walk by one of those things, I say to myself, "Carefully designed, you don't serve any community I know. The community you serve doesn't even live here. It just sleeps here and occasionally eats a $24 hamburger at Oswald's." Every curve.
Which I've never had, actually. Have you ever had a hamburger at Oswald's?
No, I've never had a $24 hamburger. I think they charge like $2 for extra onions or something like that, you know, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I know. I've actually been to places that do charge extra for that in that way for onions. Anything you've noticed in the last week or two that you want to pass on?
Not really. The police seem rather confused now that the last chief of police is gone. They haven't apparently acted as chief of police. And as far as I know, the guy that I forget his name, but he never wanted to be chief of police.
Escalante.
Yeah, he could have been chief of police long before now if he really wanted to be, basically. They just saw dog doesn't want to be. They seem confused, although they are attempting to bring law and order back to Pacific Street. I actually had one walk up to me for they're doing a lot more foot patrols downtown. Shopping season, don't want us homeless people scaring the tourists, you know, the Christmas shoppers. But I, for the first time since the pandemic began, I actually had a cop walk up to me and said, put that cigarette out.
No smoking on Pacific Avenue.
Well, it's the law.
But you didn't get a ticket for it, now.
No, but I did notice the other day, someone put up a sticker about a little-known ordinance that got passed because we're destroying the earth with DoorDash cars now. The use of, like, plastics and recyclables and cars running around delivering in more Amazon trucks than ever. I did see someone had put up a sticker noting to everybody that idling your car for more than a couple of minutes is against the law in Santa Cruz, which is a good rule. The DoorDash drivers not only create de facto parking lots in the middle of the street, but they just let the cars idle. But better yet, one day at the corner by the Pacific Roasting Company, not Pacific Roasting Company, by Pacific Cookie Company over there by Lincoln and Pacific, because of the little parking lot they create for themselves there and double parking and all that, the hook and ladder fire truck couldn't get around the corner. I said something to a cop, he just shrugged his shoulders.
Of course. Any word on what Adbusters is doing these days? I know you used to patrol the avenue with Adbusters.
Well, I was using Adbusters markup as an anti-war teaching tool.
Right.
I get their tactical briefings. As a matter of fact, when I saw Occupy Wall Street come over the wire for the first time in my life away from New York, I really wished I was back there for a moment because I knew it was going to work. That's the way the anti-war protests all worked in the 60s. They became ongoing pardons from day to day, place to place, and things like that. But they have a new thing called Third Force Collective. Third Force Collective. And I get them. I don't read them a whole lot. But they're still cooking along, and they're still the Journal of the Mental Environment, and the mental environment in the United States.